Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. Today I'm going to have my friend Drew Hodgdon, former NFL player, former Arizona State Sun Devil, on with me. And we start off talking about Tiger Woods. And let me say one thing, because I've listened to myself back from my radio show this morning. I think there are times when I've sounded a little bit cavalier or casual about Tiger Woods' car accident, and this is why. I expect him to come back. I've seen him make so many comebacks when everybody thought he was done, and because I've seen some pretty traumatic lower leg injuries be rehabbed and successfully come back from in basketball and football and what have you, I'm pretty optimistic that Tiger Woods, even at the age of 45, is going to come back. So don't think me a monster. I just think that Tiger is going to be just fine. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but we'll see. If you like the podcast and you don't think I'm a monster, go ahead and give us a 5-star review and subscribe on iTunes. Other than that, just enjoy the show. Drew, I don't know if you're like me, but when you first saw the news that Tiger Woods was involved in a one-person accident last night in California, it's fair, right? It's not out of bounds to say, oh boy, Tiger's had his share of issues with driving well under the influence of certain substances. And when I say certain substances, I'm not trying to be, like, I can't remember which substances, because it's a bunch of different stuff. Yeah, Tiger, it doesn't appear that he was intoxicated as far as when we're recording this. It sounds like it was no big deal. So then the other thought is, oh, man, I hope he's okay. Judging by if all you did was look at TV screens as you were walking through various lobbies and offices, you would have thought that Tiger Woods passed away. Turns out that he broke his leg pretty nastily. But right. What's your initial thought on all of this? Is Tiger Woods done? I hate asking that question because I feel like that's been the topic du jour once every 2 years for the past 15 years. But now it's once again, is Tiger Woods finally done at the age of 45?
Yeah, agreed. It's always an exercise in patience anytime there's a Tiger Woods story. And what's even more strange is that it's just the ongoing meta dive into the coverage of every story that's major always. Yeah. So it's not even that, you know, oh, is he okay? Was he drunk? Was he not drunk? It's that we all have to watch it and then self-evaluate and make sure we aren't overreacting to the actual coverage itself before we even know what the facts are. So like, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, am I knee-jerk overreacting to what he may or may not have even done? Like, we don't even know.
You can't even enjoy a damn salacious news story anymore without trying to figure out the 18 different angles. Yeah, it's exactly right, because look, it sounds like a bad injury. He broke his fibula, and I've seen different reports about just how bad his ankle was injured.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been spoiled by the Alex Smith stories of the world or various other guys over the last decade or so. Whenever somebody has a traumatic lower leg injury now, it doesn't really move the meter for me, because I just assume they'll be back. And the biggest barrier that Tiger Woods has in this instance is that he's 45 years old, more than right. The specific injury itself.
Yeah, it's golf is a strange one too, because the mechanics are obviously, it's all about finesse in the finer mechanics, you know? So even though he might be able to come back and it's not going to be overly significant that he couldn't, you know, train or continue playing. It's just, you never know what, you know, every little thing can throw the game off. I mean, I don't know. I'm not worried that he's not going to be competitive.
I feel so cynical now because this is just like you said, whether it's a meta, what did you call it? A meta dive? I don't even know what that means, but
yeah,
I assume.
Yeah, that's my classic saying.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Real quick. Let me know. Explain this to me like I don't actually know the answer because I totally do.
Right.
What does it actually mean whenever they say meta anything? I get very
confused. It's like it's an examination of itself.
Okay. Okay. So if something's very meta, that means like, okay, that's like if you do a meta analysis, you're evaluating yourself.
Well, it's like the reflection of itself. So it's like, you know, we've gotten to the point where in culture, almost everything now that hits the zeitgeist becomes meta within hours, it feels like, because it's like when people are saying fake news.
Yeah.
You know, it has so many meanings now layered on top of each other because the culture gets a hold of it.
So you can't even have a term without all of a sudden disagreement and analysis over what the actual term means.
Or like someone saying it ironically, but are they saying ironically? I don't know if they are. And now when I say it, is it being misinterpreted? So it's kind of like you're watching this news with Tiger and it's already, I mean, it took, I don't know, 30 minutes for CNN to start running past clips of prior incidents of Tiger. So it's already coloring what you're watching in the moment.
Right.
You're thinking, okay. Yeah, he probably cheated on Elon again.
So I feel cynical on three fronts. One is that my immediate thought was, okay, were substances involved? Two was, you know what, honestly, it's a broken leg at this point until I hear otherwise, but I feel kind of like a D-bag because I feel like I've been through these discussions. I mean, Nick Wright, who I love and is a former coworker of mine, I saw one of his clips on social media this morning was, I can't believe that I might never watch Tiger Woods play golf again. I feel like I've seen that headline like five times out of various people in the last 10 years. So I'm going to pump my brakes and wait and see. As Tiger should have done on that on-ramp or off-ramp, pump my brakes and wait and see what happens. And then the third way I feel cynical is in that I distrust people who use the word meta. I don't know. Oh, the other one.
Just like an innate distrust.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Okay. Again, explain it to me like I don't actually know exactly what this always means.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm right or wrong here. When somebody says something's beta, like is there like a beta version of something? Is that like the experimental version? Like we're gonna. What's beta mean?
Well, it's all about the context, right? So
I'm not talking about like, oh, you're a beta male. I'm talking about beta, like when somebody says, okay, that's the beta version or whatever. What's that?
Oh, well, then yeah. I mean, but how often does that come up?
I don't. I see it, and I kind of am like, oh yeah, of course I know what that means.
Like in all your highbrow investor meetings.
Yeah. No, I feel like I said
prospectus on a new software application, and you're like, that's so beta.
I mean, like when I'm reading one of those the web sites like Vice or something. I don't know. A beta is like a measure.
Like how you emphasize sites separate from web.
I can tell you're treading water on this because you don't know the actual definition either.
That's exactly. I'm stalling by time. Google beta, my website.
Beta is a measure of the volatility of a security or portfolio. So that's different. That's beta in finance. Beta is the measure of risk potential. Am I been completely getting this wrong all the time? Okay.
I just don't use it very often, which makes me feel like I'm not really I'm not doing the right thing.
All right, we're going to have to return to that. I'll revisit that later.
Yeah, circle back.
Are you messing with your microphone levels?
I'm not. Can you hear something?
I thought I could. So, okay, so Tiger Woods, we're going to because you have special experience here. You were a surgical sales rep.
Mm-hmm. For
a very successful company once.
Yeah.
When you see the description of the injury, what does that sound like to you? Does that sound like you would have been able to make a lot of money off of this? You would have been selling all kinds of pins and needles and whatnot?
Probably not. You don't really make a ton of money on a lot of the trauma stuff. I mean, if it's horrific, don't get me wrong.
What do you make the most money on?
You know, a lot of the oncology and total joint replacement.
Yeah.
Stuff, you tend to do better, but you know, now everything tends to be contract pricing and you have consultants that came in and drove down the margins. So, you know,
oh, really?
You know, just reaching in my pockets, man.
They said surgeons placed a rod into the tibia of Wood's right leg and they used a combination of screws and pins to stabilize injuries to his foot and ankle. He also suffered trauma to the muscle and soft tissue of his right leg, Yikes. Which required surgeons to release the covering of the muscles to relieve pressure due to swelling. Oh,
yeah, that's not.
Is that compartment syndrome when everything exactly. swells up and you got to cut the fascia to release it? That's scary stuff.
It is scary. Yeah, you can lose your leg. I mean, I think it's interesting they put a rod. It's pretty rare that they, I mean, it's not very common they put a rod in a tibia like that.
Really?
Not really.
Is the tibia the big one?
No, little guy.
Oh, okay. So
you mean the big between the tibia and the fibula? Is that what we're talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the bigger one. Yeah.
Okay. How do I remember that? What's the mnemonic device for that?
Big rhymes with tibia.
Okay. Tibia, fibula. That doesn't quite rhyme with it, but there's an sound in there.
Yeah, it was worth a shot.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the other news stories that came out today, since we were talking about Alex Smith and his horrific lower leg injury earlier in this episode, was Alex Smith going all emo and telling GQ the magazine about how unwanted he felt by the Washington football team at the beginning of the season. Alex Smith was the comeback player of the year this year. He went through a series of, was it 20 surgeries to try to correct the horrific injury he had to his lower leg, which was caused by J.J. Watt tackling him in a game in Washington a couple
That's
years
right.
back. Yeah. Wasn't dirty or anything. It was just a really nasty injury. So he says in this GQ interview, quote, "They didn't see it, didn't want me there, didn't want me to be a part of it, didn't want me to be on the team, the roster, didn't want to give me a chance." Mind you, it was a whole new regime. They came in. I'm like the leftovers, and I'm hurt, and I'm this liability. Heck no, they didn't want me there. At that point, as you can imagine, everything I'd been through, I couldn't have cared less about all that. Whether you like it or not, I'm giving it a go at this point, unquote. This has been taken as Alex Smith being peeved at the Washington football team. I'm trying to, because this was a written word and I can't hear the tone of his voice, do you think he was just saying it kind of matter-of-factly, or do you think he harbors some resentment over all of that? And maybe Alex Smith, who has been, look, he's been shuffled out of Kansas City, then he goes to Washington, and it's not Ron Rivera's fault that J.J. Watt crushed his leg into a million pieces, but is he peeved, or is he just laying it out like it was at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I don't know about resentment. It's hard to say if he's resentful, but it does feel like, you know, when you reiterate it that many times, he's obviously feeling pretty dejected there. Like,
yeah, when I first read the quote,
hurt feelings.
I read the quote in ESPN, and it was a little snippet, and I thought, okay, wait a second, are they taken out of this out of context? Right. So I went to the GQ article, and yeah, man.
It's like five times. Yeah.
That's an enumerated list. There's like eight commas in there. Like they could have used semicolons.
Yeah,
they
when you're having to Google synonyms for useless, it's like, I get it, man.
Didn't see it, didn't want me there, didn't want to be a part of it, didn't want me to be on their team, the roster, didn't want to give me a chance right there.
Yeah.
Didn't want to give me a chance. I'm a little over here in Alex Smith whine about how he's not given a chance or how he's an underdog. He was the number one overall pick. Like, once you're the number one, that's like Kevin Durant acting like he was an underdog of some sort.
It's interesting because, I mean, you know what this is like, obviously. I mean, it's you've been on those teams, and there's the first round picks, and there's the guys. So it's all relative to your career experience and how you've been treated from the beginning.
Yeah.
So when you suddenly aren't, it feels like a world of difference, right? Whereas if you're someone more like me and you're already an offensive lineman, which is not as glorious, some people say,
you're told to be proud of how unathletic you are. That's
exactly.
Like the life of an offensive lineman. No matter how athletic you are as an offensive lineman, people are like, you know, the great thing about you guys is you're fat and ugly and you're not that athletic either. It's the best.
Right. You're slow and you're just a lunch pail guy. And I'm like,
are you my dysfunctional uncle? What the hell are you?
Thank God I have years of built up resilience from, you know, being called fat my whole life. But it's interesting. I mean, I think that he clearly is adopting to this new lifestyle of a guy who's not going to be the perennial starter, regardless of what the situation is. And you're watching maybe like in real time how he's digesting that, or how he did. Maybe he already has.
If you're
a guy who's gotten used to it over time, it just sounds like sour grapes.
He and Teddy Bridgewater are the guys that are annoying me the most right now, because Teddy Bridgewater scrubbed the Panthers from his social media and went private because there's been talk of potentially trading for Deshaun Watson. And I feel like Teddy Bridgewater is the same way, that he came... You know, at one point he was everybody thought he was the next phenom. Then he gets drafted in the first round. A lot of people thought he was underdrafted, but then he has this horrific leg injury and he's floated around a little bit too. But it's not like his performance this last year after he signed a 3-year deal was anything that should have made anybody feel like, wow, Bridgewater's the next guy. Yeah. And I'm noticing this trend. Tell me if you've noticed this year. Over the last decade, actually. So the trend started a decade ago when I think because of Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, and a few other guys, wide receivers stopped being the divas they had been notoriously been. Because before there was a whole lot of whether it was, I mean, well, let's see, Dez Bryant has been around the last decade, but I feel like there were many fewer diva wide receivers over the last decade. But now all of a sudden this year, in their place have popped up the quarterbacks because Russell Wilson is whining about stuff publicly. Roethlisberger has always been a diva and made a whole big... Roethlisberger has always gotten dramatic about a lot of things. But he's got... And actually, I'd say this year, maybe he's actually been a little bit more humble than typical, but he's still in that category. Aaron Rodgers, diva-like after the season. Deshaun Watson scrubbed the Texans from his social media. Am I missing anybody? Carson Wentz. Apparently thought
like a public meltdown.
Yeah, nobody's meaner than mean old Doug Peterson, apparently. Can't handle tough coaching from Doug freaking Peterson. I don't know if Peterson's even sober half the time.
Yeah, Carson Wentz turned into the brother from the Royal Tenenbaums during the tennis match. Where he's just like throwing his game sock and his like belongings all across the field, and people are just staring at him awkwardly.
Luke Wilson deconstructs.
Yeah,
that was Luke Wilson, and it was because Luke Wilson was upset that the adopted sister that he was in love with had married Bill Murray. Right, that was what.
Yeah,
so what is Carson Wentz's Bill Murray? Some people have thought that maybe it's just the fact that people in Philadelphia are mean and Carson Wentz is a country kid and needs to be out in the Midwest.
Yeah, I think that's a realization that the world, his whole life, he's been living a lie.
Yeah.
Like he just realized that the world is a lot larger than he originally thought it was. He actually went into a big city and was just stunned.
What my pappy like my told me about the world outside of, yeah.
He probably exactly. It's like The Village. M. Night Shyamalan's The Village. Like he got outside The Village and suddenly he's just been living this lie.
Yeah. You know, maybe he had like a sexual experience that he wasn't ready for. Met some girl from the big city and destroyed him utterly. Some girl from the big city started talking dirty to him.
Like he just felt completely violated by like what's really a pretty pedestrian sexual experience.
She wanted me to.
God, that was a lot. And
she wanted me to do it like Discovery Channel stuff. I can't do that.
Right. Yeah, this is just a Tuesday.
This is my theory about this thing with quarterbacks becoming more diva-ish. I think that the league in general has gotten more transactional about the way they treat players in general, but also quarterbacks. And that front offices now have gotten a lot more analytical about it. I don't think they're not going to put in 4 years waiting for a guy to develop. If a guy goes south, they might abandon him a lot quicker. And the one stat that ESPN put out, I think it was Field Yates put out, that was really shocking right after the Wentz trade, was that all of the quarterbacks who were drafted in the first round from 2009 to 2016 are now on different teams than the ones that drafted them. Out of 22 draft picks in that time, not a single one of them remains on the team that drafted them.
Wow. Is that atypical over the prior same span of time?
Well, that's a question I wish I'd asked myself when I was shocked by the.
I would imagine,
because for one, I mean, you go through Eli Manning, Tom Brady was what, 2001. I mean, if you go from guys from the first part of the decade, there's at least a few of the superstar quarterbacks that are still around. So I would imagine that's atypical.
I think you might be right. That's really interesting. And I hadn't thought about that. That maybe they're just what it really is some pushback on their having to adjust to how transactional it is for every other player normally. And they're not having to, they've never really had to do that. Where historically it's like we've all sat there and just watched guys just struggle year in, year out, and they still just are, it's like they're the given incumbent, regardless. Yeah. Well, and as another player, you're like, that must be great.
Yeah, that must just be awesome to have a pass.
That must be great.
Well, you look at, let's say, David Carr. I mean, David Carr, if he had played 4 years, did he get 4 years? 5 years? He had 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Of opportunity? Yeah, 5 years to try to develop into a good starter in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happens anymore. That's just simply not going to happen. And I think with Deshaun Watson, put aside all of the drama from the front office, I wonder if part of it with Deshaun Watson, or I would imagine this has got to be at least part of it, but he just went 4-12. He looks around the league, looks and sees what happens with quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, even guys like Carson Wentz, who, you know, goes from being an MVP caliber quarterback to now out on his ass, and wonders, with this roster around me, does it even matter what happens next year? Like, I could go from the toast of the town to just, you know, being talked about as trash pretty damn quickly if things go south here. And maybe that's as simple as it is in some respects. And he certainly doesn't trust that current Texans front office to figure it out or to get it done. So that a lot of these guys, and whether it's Russell Wilson, all these guys, they also look at Aaron Rodgers and see, okay, here's a guy that, you know, realistically a decade ago, we all thought he was going to win three, maybe four Super Bowls, right? Definitely. He'll win at least three Super Bowls. But when his team has not drafted a skill position player in the first round, Drew, since they drafted Aaron Rodgers. Yes. Aaron Rodgers was the last skill position player there.
I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about how spoiled teams are with stellar quarterbacks, just like the Texans have been, really. I mean, really. It's kind of been the same story. I mean, in different ways, but yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's, they just feel like they can rely on it and they don't need to really, you know, do the little things.
And they get away with it. It's the same thing what Jeff Van Gundy always said, don't ignore in victory what you would address in defeat. And that's very, very true. And hold on, let me see. Gosh, dang it. I'm trying to pull this thing up. My internet's not working. I think if you look at the Packers, okay, let's see. Since when was Aaron Rodgers drafted? It was a long time ago. It was like 2008-ish or so. That was the other thing I discovered the other day, was the year after Aaron Rodgers was drafted. I had forgotten that the Packers went 4-12.
He was drafted in like 2006, I think. He was the year after me, I think.
Oh, really?
I think so.
A.J. Hawk was drafted in 2006.
He might have even been in my... I think he might have even been in my class.
Okay. What were you, 2005?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2005, Aaron Rodgers. Since then, they've drafted A.J. Hawk, Justin Harrell, Jordy Nelson. And
Jordy Nelson.
He was a second-round pick.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, B.J. Raji. Oh, man. Boy, he's old. Brian Bulaga, Derek Sherrod, Nick Perry, Deton Jones, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Demarius Randall, Kenny Clark, a lot of defensive linemen, Kevin King was a second rounder, Jair Alexander, cornerback in the first round, Rashawn Gary, and Jordan Love. So Jordan Love, that's right, I forgot, Jordan Love. They drafted a quarterback. So between Aaron Rodgers, they drafted Aaron Rodgers in 2005 and then went until 2020 without drafting another offensive skill position player in the first round. And when they finally did it, they traded up to draft the quarterback. Like, how perfectly symmetrical is that? So I feel like Aaron Rodgers has a little bit of a right to maybe be more of a diva this year. He's always been a little bit of a diva because guys just feel like, okay, I got to scrap and fight for what's
it's so difficult because the fine line that you have to walk, I'm sure, as a quarterback especially, between being perceived as a diva or someone who's, you know, non-compliant or combative with the front office or the rest of the team. It's just so thin between having to do that and make sure that you are leveraging the authority that you have in that position to make sure your team is successful as it needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard. That's why I feel, I mean, as an outsider and someone who's not in the Houston market anymore and seeing Deshaun Watson, I have a lot of empathy for that position he's in, where he's trying to be a team player. He's trying to do the right thing, not alienate the fans, but also, you know, he's watching a dumpster fire just happen around him at every angle. It's not a good situation.
Yeah. And especially when you're known as a guy that doesn't complain all right. that. So I right. get it. It's but now I would imagine the powers that be are getting really nervous now that they see all the, when you see the quarterbacks getting agitated, you start wondering, oh boy, we're going to lose complete control.
Yeah.
We're going to lose complete control. All right. We're going to do something now, Drew. I'm going to have an intro for it at some point, but it's my self-loathing self-help section. So I'm going to do this rapid fire. These are 16 uncomfortable acts people try to avoid, but that actually make your life better.
Okay.
So these are things that people avoid, but if you did them, it would make your life better. I want you to tell me whether you do these or not. This is number one. This is by this Brianna Weist on Medium. Worrying about not having a five-year plan. Are you currently worried that you don't have a five-year plan?
Yes.
Are you really?
Oh, for
sure. Yeah. The idea that any of us know where we will be years down the road is an illusion, a comforting illusion. Yeah, I feel like a five-year kind of goalposts or whatever are still very helpful to keep you on track.
I agree. I mean, only insofar as I've learned that I never had one, so it's good to have one. I think everyone says that the best time to develop a five-year plan is only when you're about to turn 40.
Oh, really? Oh, because then you know. I gotcha. Yeah. I forgot that you're that old. I forgot that.
Yeah,
that
I old. Am, man. Yeah.
No, but you're doing a five-year plans, and it's, I think I was on maybe my third or fourth five-year plan when I realized, wow, not a single one of these. I'm on my fourth five-year plan, and I'm 4 years into the whole process. So
yeah. It's especially weird when you're coming out of sports too, right? Because it's like you just start, you know, later in life.
We're not going to make it through all these. So let me tell you a story about J.J. Watt. And it was when I was talking to Sean Cody in 2012. So this was after J.J. Watt's rookie season. He'd ended up having a really good stretch in the playoffs. He kind of really blossomed at the end of 2011. I'm talking to Sean Cody, and Sean Cody was a nose tackle, a veteran nose tackle for the Texans. Connor Barwin was a veteran defensive lineman or outside linebacker on that team. And Sean said that he and Connor were talking to JJ his rookie year, and JJ showed them like his notebook with his 5-year plan and how he had it all broken down to how he had everything all set up. And Sean said he and Connor kind of looked at each other like, oh crap, I got to get my shit together. Right. Like, what's wrong? This kid's dialed in. And they probably, if I put myself in Sean Cody's position, I probably would have been like, all right, this kid's a little uptight. He's got to loosen up.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, bam.
It works. Yeah. Which is not a thing that you really see in sports. Well, not in football anyway.
Okay, second thing you need to do, spend a whole day by yourself. Have you done that lately?
Yeah, I've been doing that for about 10 years, so we're good.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Brianna. Sounds like
thanks.
Brianna.
Yeah, thanks, Brianna. I'm lonely. Thanks.
Brianna, thanks for reminding me that solitude isn't a choice for me. Poor Brianna's like, every now and then, you have to tell all your numerous friends to just back off a little. I need me.
Take advantage of the pandemic, guys. Be alone. Yeah, got it. Thanks.
I feel like, okay, doing nothing is number three. I feel that's kind of the same thing. Admitting when you're wrong. I think you've probably gotten pretty good at that over time in your life, right?
Yeah, tons of experience.
And you know what I can sense now? I don't know if I'm any better at admitting when I'm wrong, but now I can tell when I'm definitely wrong and that I'm still fighting. I'm self-aware that I'm still fighting simply out of pride and ego. So like I'm aware enough to know, wow, I'm way in the wrong here, and I'm even more in the wrong because I'm still clinging on to feeling like my pride is being threatened or yet.
Well, because it's that competitive spirit in you too that just like is just deep in there, and it's more about winning than anything else. It's not even really about the point to begin with.
That's when I go meta and realize like, boy, but that's not right. That's not right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Letting go of feeling anxious for no reason.
How do you know that when it's for no reason? Though?
I've learned that you got to listen to your body. I've learned to recognize just when you're feeling anxiety. A lot of times you walk around and you don't realize you're kind of like stuck. You're stuck in a fight or flight response that's turned halfway on.
Yeah.
You don't even realize it. You're kind of on edge. And I've just noticed between whether it's my temper, my mood, my physical, like my heart rate or my breathing, I can kind of just sense when I'm in that tense mode. And I've been doing, I quit meditating. I stopped that. And I'm glad I did, because now I focus just completely on breathing. And it's just, it's so much quicker and more effective. And I'm starting to understand now too, that I think a lot of the benefits for some people, not for the people that are really good at meditating, yeah, they get all that brainwave activity and everything.
Right.
But I think for a lot of people, the biggest value in meditation, at least in the short term, is just that it makes you control your breathing.
Yeah. Like the physiological benefits of just slowing down. Yeah.
I read a book called Breath by, I want to say it's James Nestor, which is a really good book. Really good book. I highly recommend. I'll send that to you. Honoring your coping mechanisms, whatever. Applying your applying your judgments of other people to yourself. I feel like you and I are both pretty self-hating people. Like we.
That's not a problem. Don't worry. I will absolutely hate on myself as deeply as I hate on you.
Oh, this is an interesting one. This is one I struggle with because my entire profession is talking about other people. Having something to talk about other than your opinions about others' lives.
Oof. Yeah, it's tough when that's like mostly your job.
Oh, I think old Brianna kind of really hit the nail on the head here. She says, it is easy to connect over mutual dislike, but it is a toxic practice. Work on talking about books or ideas or travel or anything else you find even mildly interesting. I'm half joking when I say, look, when I'm talking about sports, I'm talking about athletes and everything, but it's obviously not. It's not me talking about that bitch in accounting that I don't like or something.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Brianna. You just summed up like all of Facebook and the problems in the modern age.
Probably just like finding common ground by disliking other people.
Yeah. Everyone's just the most common, you know, the most of what we all have in common, it seems like culturally, is just taking a giant shit on everything else.
I tried to help you out with this the other day when I tried to get you to like Kim Kardashian and appreciate her for all of her strengths as a business person.
I think I can still find faults in her specifically.
Yeah. Well, she's a celebrity though. So that's a little, there's an old saying.
Yeah, fair.
I'm sure it's like a Chinese proverb or something, but it's something like...
An old Chinese proverb about Kim K.
It's something like, let's see, should I start with the negative part of the pyramid first or the top part of the pyramid? I think I'd say it's just at the bottom of the pyramid. It's something like small people talk about people, medium people talk about things, and then like truly elevated people talk about ideas. Something along those lines. That you just like in general, you should always be trying to elevate yourself into talking about ideas and larger things than just gossip, idle gossip.
Absolutely. Instead of the most surface level anecdote associated with any given piece of news or totally. I agree.
I feel bad about everything I said about Tiger Woods earlier. And I feel like I was being pretty, you know, I feel for Tiger.
Nah, I mean, you know, it's better than, you know, running a nonstop memorial montage, even though he's just in the hospital.
Feeling healthy shame when you know you've done something wrong?
Feeling a healthy amount of shame? Is that what it says?
Yeah. Feeling healthy shame. So shame is a healthy and crucial part of our emotional capacity.
Oh, I totally agree. I feel like we're in a shameless era right now. I think shame is healthy. I'm a believer in that.
I think a certain amount of shame. I guess there's a difference between
There's a balance.
I read an article about this, and I think it was the difference between shame and regret, or the difference between shame and feeling responsible. There's the shame tends to be more self-hatred, where regret or responsibility or what have you is, all right, I feel bad about that, but I know I'm a good person. I got to be careful because I'm a good person. I got to feel bad about that.
Yeah, so you got to direct it into direct it into future action.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just being Catholic.
I'll leave it on this one. Doing things slowly but well. I struggle with that. I hurry through a lot of things.
Yeah, you know who's a huge advocate of that, and I don't even know if it's always on purpose, but is
Joe Rogan.
Dave Anderson.
Dave Anderson, the former Texas wide receiver, who was just on my radio show this morning, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
He called in because he lives in California and he's got nobody out there to commiserate about the Texans.
No one else to connect with. Yeah. Hey. Oh, hey, guys. Yeah. I mean, he talks about it all the time, how slow and steady is fast.
Wow. That's interesting because he's a naturally hyper person. So I wonder,
think he has to tell himself that.
Yeah, probably. I wonder, is that something he's learned over time? Because he's got a lot of energy, but does he have to consciously tell himself to slow down?
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know this, but you can almost tell maybe, you know, if you recall, like just watching him play and his approach to running routes and everything else. I mean, he was pretty precise.
Yeah.
And so not a lot of wasted movement. And I don't know if he was ever, you know, if you've ever struggled with, I struggled with this, where a lot of extra movement, like low economy of movement, one of the best coaches I ever had talked about economy of movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could tell he just learned that it's faster if you're just a little slower, but you're not wasting movement and you're very precise, you know, and
sometimes to go fast, you got to go slow.
Wow. Yeah.
Isn't that, that's in a movie of some sort. It feels like a racing movie or something. Sometimes cars is sometimes you got to go left, you got to turn right. I don't know. It's one of those. Sometimes you can go fast. Somebody email me, Seth.Painted@Entercom.com.
Someone email me a miscellaneous quote about racing.
Yeah, reach out to me on the Twitter machine or what have you. So, okay, buddy, I feel like we've grown. I feel like we've learned. I feel like Alex Smith is not petty, or I think he's got a reason. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and damn it, it's a healthy chip on his shoulder. And I think that Tiger Woods, honestly, to sum up Tiger Woods, I've just seen him come back enough times. I think there's a better than 50% chance that he comes back and plays in a major. I don't know if he wins a major. Ben Hogan got in his really bad car accident when he was 38 years old, and he was messed up bad. And the medical technology was not nearly the same in 1949. And he came back and won majors. So Tiger Woods, just a couple years removed from winning the Masters, I think there's still a chance.
Yeah, he can still definitely beat Ben Hogan. Is that what you're...
That's a great point. I'm going to leave it on that. That's awesome. Yeah.